It is possible that potentially Prytogenic will go to a new level, and that might be the undoing, the bright side to the future as well. I mean, that's the real stark reality. Prytogenic is already a rock solid 4.5 range to plus 5.1 right now. And on the race matrix, when you stress test them, they're virtually identical, Ralphie. And this is why we've seen it, Ralphie. These mares, they only have to improve another half length. And all of a sudden, they take themselves to another level. And I wouldn't be surprised if a horse like Prytogenic ends up potentially getting into that plus 6 range. And if that happens, victory will be hers.
Now on PG Podcast Network, it's time for the year-round carnival with Vince Accardi and your host, Racetrack Ralphie.
G'day, thanks for checking out our year-round carnival Monday podcast. Starting off with a little bit of Friday work from Vince Accardi, discussing could Prytogenic get to a new level, and then of course Matt Hill's fantastic call, courtesy of racing.com in the All-Star Mile. Sydney had the meeting with great depth, but the race itself, the All-Star Mile, it was a cracker. Vince Accardi, good morning to you.
Ralphie, good morning. It's always a cracker when a horse gets out.
Yep.
And is just dynamic up front and continues to keep going.
Was this the bookend of your journey? Didn't you start off with Faux Rogue?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so it's interesting when these horses come along and you, like everything in life, at a given point in time, you just realize it doesn't matter how many other fast horses there's going to be out there. There's no one going to be able to take that horse on under any circumstances, and therefore it would be left alone, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. So, all right, firstly, let's put the mouth guard in and discuss how did Caulfield play according to your IVR, where obviously jockeys were very keen to get away from the rails.
Well, this is interesting. There was the track manager. Because I listened to him on, it was on Sky.
Yep.
You know, race morning, and he said there's no track bias. He actually said specifically there's no lanes. So it is a problem for people, isn't it? Particularly people that manage tracks and operate them. They don't like that, do they? But the lanes were 100% in play in a very serious way at Caulfield, like it always is, right?
Well, let's put some meat on the bones of like it always is, that statement you just finished with there, yeah. Because obviously, the best lanes don't move. So the best lanes are probably, what, 10 to 12 out as a starting point?
It's 10 out or wider at Caulfield. See, Caulfield doesn't run like Rose Hill where you have sections then where you go reverse.
Yep.
And Caulfield, when you start getting in 10, the wider you go, the faster the track. There's no like, oh, hang on, it's only 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and then you've got to get to like lane 25. No, it just gets faster and faster.
Which actually Mark Zara touched on after he rode the last winner, Brunel, God bless him. But the point being that once you put irrigation on, you're going to accentuate that bias.
Well, it depends, doesn't it?
So that's a question, sorry, not a statement. Yeah.
Well, that depends, right? Depends on irrigation, what sort of treatment they put on the home straight.
Yep.
That will determine many things. Now, it was interesting about how that track did play early in the day, right, in terms of track speed. Personally, when I look at this, race one, 7.7 lengths below benchmark. This is we're talking the raw figures, right? Race two, 10.8. Race three, this is minus 5.3. And then, realistically, you started to get a bit closer to what I would understand a G4 to be. So in my view, there's no doubt those very early races were absolutely someone more like S6. So that's important, right?
Yep.
And like in a genuine S6, not like, hang on a second, it's not, because it's just 100% pace related. It was definitely in that zone. Now, in the home straight, though, like I said, you got this really dynamics. The home straight was pretty much G4 right from the beginning.
Yep. Two-speed track.
Yep. And then it started to blend in a bit more later in the day. This is why no one wanted to get near the rail, right?
Yep.
And what happens is when you go automatically into the lanes in the home straight where you're going to be on faster ground and therefore the times are a bit quicker, but ultimately this, a lot of it was accentuated by the fact that around the back there was a lot more give in the ground, and this is why the riders were coming back and saying, oh, it's got plenty of juice in it and too much juice. So in my view, they got it wrong.
No doubt. So let's blend that all together and get to Pride of Jenny. How fast was she? And also, how good a ride was it by not just pace, but once you saw at the 600-meter mark and they did that head-on shot, and there she was, sixth off the fence with Declan Bates going, bang, I'm leading, but I'm getting to that best ground first. Oh, good luck catching it.
Well, to have a young guy like Declan Bates, now whether he came up with it himself earlier in the day or now he has a very clear understanding that this is where the best lanes are.
Well, sorry to butt in. I did see, I'm sure it was Snowy Clark, tweet to me that Peter Ellis took him for a bit of a walk.
Well, that summed it up, right? Yep. There you go. That put the nail in the coffin in terms of not having to guess. And that completely helped take this rider, in my view, and hopefully others to come, to a new level. And then when you look at the breakdown, how brilliant his ride was, just those micro splits from the 800 home, 2.8 above benchmark 8 to 6, 1.3 below 6 to 4, 2 lengths below 4 to 2, and then 3.9 below last 200 metres, ridden to absolute perfection, and the scary part is the horse still improving.
So how fast was that first section?
12.3. So, not that fast for this horse, right?
Okay, yeah. So I want to put something to you, though, because we're talking about how, you know, the track was improving, but it was obviously affected early. The very next race, just before we talk in depth about the All-Star Mile, the very next race is a big field of handicappers. They're basic horses. Yeah, I know that. Lead speed just minus 3.2. That tells me that the track was still affected, that maybe the lead speed of 12.3, maybe adjusting for the track, he had to sort of more, it's more 15, 16, something insane.
Well, see, the thing is this, Ralphie, as just touching on that and putting a real level of clarity on it.
Yep.
That track around the back all the way to the home straight, right from the beginning, was like S6. And we got to S5, right? But you had the home straight being rock solid G4. And this creates a lot of havoc, and it does create a lot of problems. In fact, in my humble view, when you look at performances of horses, what's more unfair? Having a lane bias in the home straight that everybody can be aware of, or having a scenario not being acutely aware that you have a major disjointed structure of track conditions that wasn't communicated by the race club? Either they don't know, right, or they didn't want people to know. I don't know which one's right, but that actually creates, in my view, a much, much bigger problem for performances of horses, because you get that wrong, you've cooked your horse before you even got into the home straight, and you're done.
So the 12.3 lengths above benchmark first section. Let's then go back to Mr. Brightside, the favourite. Now, sorry, firstly, let's complete Pride of Jenny. My mistake there. The grab we played of you from the Friday podcast was this horse could still get to a new level. 5.1 lengths above benchmark was her best at Moonee Valley, actually, and we underlined this in the podcast. That was when running second to Amelia's Jewel. Then fantastic with two mid-fours wins, obviously, in Cup Week and the Empire Rose, and then the Champions Mile beating Mr. Brightside. But you said there is a chance this horse is going to get to a new level. 5 weeks between runs, Kieran Maher elected after that or not to run her in the Futurity, keep the freshness in her legs, keep her at her best, and just race her second up So this was a decision by the stable. We spoke about the jockey, but now the stable also, as far as programming, and then she's put it all together. So what was her overall performance?
Well, the overall performance was 5.6 lengths above benchmark, which is a new PB. A couple of things. Number one, the race matrix. Ralphie, I don't just say this lightly. It's a revolutionising tool in terms of bringing, you know, distinct insight to the race class classification and, in my view, taking the whole new dimension of how one is going to be able to, in a forward motion, do proper handicapping. Because ultimately, this is what we do, right? We're handicapping. We're just not moving weights around. We're just moving numbers around. And we're using all the prism of sectional times, which is the absolute purest way to do it. No matter what, especially if you've got history and lots of practice like we do. And when we talk about prior to Jenny and the stable, firstly, you and I discovered, because I didn't discover this before then, because where our journey of, you know, communicating together initially was on the radio 10, 11 years ago, whenever it was, right? And here we are all those years later. We came across those very early mares and just like blown away how they could make this, not a quantum leap, but just this continuous improvement. And we've seen six-year-old mares getting better. So no surprise, you know, we make this statement leading into this race for Pride of Jenny about that. And the second part is, yes, no matter what about the Markamp, they're absolute geniuses about the way they prepare their horses. They are the best in the game at the moment. Like Waller at one stage, like, was right up there. Now, maybe he's got too many horses. I don't know. He's still there, but Ma is even more dangerous and more dynamic.
I wouldn't think there'd be many trainers who would have avoided the Futurity after that first up run. I would say just about every trainer would have said, right, Futurity and then the All-Star. That was a big call to avoid it. So, you know, hats off.
Well, they're getting smart.
Yep.
Because how many races, when you only have one good horse, which if you're lucky enough for a stable to have, that's already a great bonus. Yep. You want to win everything, but the problem is you can't.
Yeah.
And you want to race everywhere. Problem is that somewhere along that road, it's going to impact you. And maybe he learnt some things from some horses in the spring. This is the Mars stable, right? Where they targeted everything and things don't always go to plan when that happens.
This was Gold Trip, wasn't it?
Well, that's a perfect example because somewhere you will have to pay a price for that. There will be a penalty somewhere because horses are not robots.
That makes it interesting too that Gold Trip after the first run, they've chosen not to give him another run and he'll be going to the Australian Cup second up. So that might be same because – and there was the other thing, Pride of Jenny after that Mooney Valley run was flat in the Toorak, and that's what gave her such a good price in that Empire Rose. God bless her. So let's get to Mr. Brightside. We're back. The elastic band theory is in play. I think it's 8 lengths or more. Good luck in a fast race. So the fallacy, and you've unpicked this a while back. The fallacy of fast pace suits get back horses is right here right now. Firstly, how fast was it going? And Craig Williams had a choice: press forward hard from wide to try and find a position, cop your medicine and be three wide throughout, or be where he ended up. So how fast was he going and what's your thoughts via the numbers? We're not sitting on the saddle, but via the numbers, did he make the right call given what his circumstances were?
Well, he ran into a couple of problems, right? That was one of them, obviously, you know, where he was drawn and you have to make decisions. So he decided to make that decision and go back. But he's travelling 4 lengths above benchmark, so you can't kid yourself, right? That's real speed.
How fast has he gone at 4 lengths? How fast has he previously touched 4 lengths in the first section in his career?
Well, if we look at his entire career, right, there's not a lot of races where the horse actually goes above benchmark. That's the first thing, right?
So he's going 4 lengths quicker than his general comfort zone.
Well, his comfort zone is somewhere around benchmark plus one maximum, minus one, minus two. That's roughly his range. He has extended himself and won at a top end speed of plus three. And he's been on a couple of occasions in that two range. But in the two range, it's hit and miss whether it works for him because it all gets back down to what happens in the mid-race extension. So that's that. When you're going fast or slow, there's also penalties. There's penalties of what happens to your mid-race capability in terms of your endurance, your sustained speed. Does it get interrupted? Doesn't it get interrupted? That has a colossal impact. See, this is another thing about why I don't focus on weights as much, is because these are far more powerful impacts on horses, is what happens in the dynamics and moves. Now, Brightside, Mr. Brightside, when we look at this horse and what he did, four lengths above benchmark, he's already overreaching Ralphie. That make no mistake, and he's out the back. If he had his way, he needed to be where Cascadian was, who's run third, by the way, right? So that's actually the better ride. But this is all part of the process. Pressure. Where Craig's at, he probably said, I'm too far back. I need to get rolling. So he wanted to be a little bit more positive, but that's going to also affect you. And then I looked at the move, what he did between the 8 and the 4. So he's going 2.7 above. And then I'm bringing to you Cascadian, who's 2.5 lengths slower through that first section, going 1.5 above. And that's where I reckon Brightside needed to be if he's running out the back, right? His move in between the 8 and the 4 was 3.8 above versus 2.78 above. But the challenge is this. Just that movement coming around the turn and then to the finish line, he's made this move sort of coming to the 600 metres where he's had a drop in velocity, right, coming around the bend, and then obviously getting into your run lane. Because as you're peeling out to get into your run lane, Ralphie, what's happening is, yes, you have the advantage of the lanes, and you know the lanes are of less advantage when they're going fast, right? Because you're tired, right? But you will also lose velocity. And this horse did lose 3.7 lengths of velocity. So it can be argued, was this the crucial point, right? Or was it because he was out the back? And then he's made this savage move as best as he could, but the horse is done, right? This is, again, the impact of when a race is fast. He moved between the 4 and the 2, 0.9 above, so he's actually able to rebound by 1.4 lengths in terms of speed. And then he's gone. I look at his last 200 metres, it's 1.3 lengths below benchmark. Cascadian's outstripped it by 0.2. Like, this is virtually nothing, and I'm only highlighting that because, in my view, that's probably the best position for Brightside to have a better run. Now, the mistake that happens is this. When the rail's 6, you don't need to go that wide, Ralphie. You don't need to go to 15, 16 in a fast run race. You have to save ground. You've got to cut the corner, and you've got to be only 4 off the fence. We'll have the same result, right? The result would be your movement of energy velocity loss will be far less. And Pride of Jenny, and then I compare Pride of Jenny to Mr. Brightside, that last 200 metres, there's only 2.5 lengths difference for an 8-length difference in early speed. And you've got to look at this, Ralphie. Between the 8 and the 4, Pride of Jenny's going 1.1 above versus Mr. Brightside 2.7. Only 1.2 lengths difference for saving 8.3 lengths of energy. So now we'll flip the coin. Of course, if you know you're going to be in a race where you've got a horse that hot, you must go forward, mate. And you must find a place to slot in. And he would have slotted in. I mean, I know people say you get trapped wide, but that's bullshit. He wouldn't have got caught 3 wide. Where's that? How do you know that? Why? Why would he get trapped 3 wide? Why couldn't he have found a spot behind Buffalo River? He was never going to run at that speed.
So never. If he was going 6 or 8 lengths above benchmark early.
Yep.
He still couldn't have beaten Prodigy Jenny, could he?
Well, I don't know.
Right, okay, it's an unknown.
Right, and the reason why I say I don't know is what happens is, yes, of course you do know he's going to weaken, right? But they both weakened, right? Prodigy Jenny also weakened. So the degree of your – see, what you've got to look at is how much are you going to put to the inefficiency from inside to the 600 to the 200? And this is the collective. Overall for Brightside, the impact for that horse was 4.5 lengths. The Pride of Jenny impact, right, was plus, Ralphie, because that horse was de-accelerating naturally and Brightside's had a fartlek play.
Yep.
In a race of pressure. So, and if you want to sort of frank that even further, right, again, you know, I come back to cascading. He was the only horse in the field that had a positive mid-race squeeze. So you either go all the way out the back and you run the horse in your comfort zone, cut the corner, save ground. So there were some errors as well for Craig Williams, right? In this race, because the pressure's so big, it's tough, right?
Yep.
And yes, a lot of people say, well, if he'd drawn better, he would have automatically gone forward. But yes, that's true, possibly. But he would have to deal with the pace and he would have had a smoother run. Would have given him, well, in the end, it probably still gives him either second or first, right?
Yep.
Maybe the margin's a lot closer. Maybe. You don't know. You don't know, right, until it happens. But the reality is this. From an overall score point of view, Brightside did not deliver its best performance, right?
Yep.
And that's because of the way the race was run and the work that Craig had to do in a fast – see, fast-run races, it can be very diabolical, right? And you said it, Ralphie, out the back ain't the best place.
3-6 is your golden spot.
Absolutely, and that's where he needed to be. He needed to be inside that zone. The elastic band is the outer limits 8, right? But the golden spot is 3-6. And why is that? Well, you couldn't get any more proof than this race. Where did Buffalo River end up running?
4th.
Thank you. Yeah. And he was not even 2 lengths off the leader.
And that's why, yeah. Okay, we wanted to get in deep on that one. Darren's asked, I was very bullish about Pride of Jenny. I think she's the best horse in Australia. Well, that's a fair argument too. I love her backstart story. How far can she go? Can she win a Cox Plate? So we'll park that. What we'll do as our bonus for our members is I'll do a discussion about the 2000 with these three horses. They're going to the Australian Cup, so we'll touch on that. So that can be our members bonus. Everyone loves talking about Pride of Jenny, so we'll do a bit more on that too.
Absolutely.
All right, let's have a look at Rose Hill, where obviously it was Coolmore Day. Let's start with Alistair's question, Vince. Ralphie, one quick question. Did Vince get the vomit bucket out? That aside, what does he reckon about Zardozzi? Looked a strong win. So we'll get to Zardozzi, but he, of course, is referring to what type of track was Rose Hill going to play at. What did it produce, Vince?
Well, we were out there. We articulated to all the members early, or all the people that brought the podcast, is that right?
If you got the Friday podcast, what we did after race one, we sent everyone a first look at the data from race one just to emphasise exactly how the track was playing, and that was our little bonus, and we might as well say it now while we've got you that this week, Golden Slipper Day, we'll be doing a preview podcast, and there's also a four-week bonus at a discount rate if you want to jump on. So racetrackralphie.com.au, click through the links via to get the podcast preview. If you're already a Daily Sectionals customer, the final edition race speed profiles that you can get audio only. But Vince, how did Rose Hill play?
Yeah, well, the beauty is this. Thank you, Ralphie, for being able to send out an email. I did get a few emails a little bit later from some other clients.
Yep.
And I was able to give them like a little bit more of an update, like, because we were around race 3-4 by that stage.
Yep.
And I was still sort of trending and watching. I don't always do that, right? I usually just like to do the first race just to get a real bit of a feel, sometimes the second, because if one's out of the chute and one's from the turning, we can get that sort of cross-sectional view. But the reality was this, we were definitely in a much better place by the time we'd sort of gotten 3-4 races in terms of the track condition. And when we look at it, it didn't start off very good. It started off like 12 lengths below standard, race one. It was a decent sized field. Whilst the pace wasn't very hot, but it was coming out of the chute, so it needed some level of treatment. And then when race two came, it was really good because we got to see what it was like coming out on that course proper, you know, and travelling around. And that was like 5.3 lengths below benchmark. So there was a significant difference. But realistically, from that point on, what I could see in the intel was this continuous improvement. And of course, you have to then look at the blending of, okay, what about the quality of horses? How are we going to factor that in? But ultimately, I felt we got to the old school of dead four, G4, right? I mean, it's really weird how, you know, people want to play the game of, you know, letters and, you know, numbers, but that was probably where the reality was. It was really a genuine G4. Now, again, Rose Hill's no different to any other track. The lanes are in play, they're like heavily in play, and there are some no-nos at Rose Hill, and a lot of riders got caught here. So where the difference is between Rose Hill and Caulfield is this. Rose Hill Lane 1-2's a negative when it's in the true position. It only has a very small strip, 2-6. And then you've got to get typically 11 or 12, lane 11 or 12, to get back to the same as 2-6, and then you start getting quickening. But that lane's 7-12 can be a big disadvantage, and a lot of
no man's land.
Yeah, no man's land, no advantages. All you're doing is covering more ground to get there, right? Yep. And that, on the technical side, that actually turns out to be a negative, because you actually lose velocity, you lose speed, you blow more conditioning, and therefore your performance will be more sideways and downwards as opposed to upwards. And then if you're lucky enough, and there were some horses, there's prime example. If you're not sure about this when I talk about it, just go and have a look at Peak, a horse that ran on that day. It was like lane 18 or 17, whatever it was, when I was looking at the steward's report, our vision, and it was a tornado the way that horse finished. And that horse isn't that good. Yes. And he's good, right? Please, I got that wrong. It's a good horse, but he's not that good to break 11, right? Because if he was in lane 9 or 10, he actually probably goes 3 lengths below benchmark. And if he's in lane 6, he might go like 11.2 or 11.3 on the raw figures, right? And if he's in lanes, 8, 9, 10, 11, he probably goes 11.5, 11.6, right? Even worse. So that's the massive difference.
So a couple of tweets here from Regan Bayless. Rose Hill track, a soft six today with very little rain about. Inside three lanes being inferior to middle out. The last four Saturdays in Sydney, the tracks have been understandard, not world-class, which we market our carnivals to be. Disappointing. Rob Waterhouse, nothing is more damaging to racing than yesterday's Rose Hill track. Punters quite rightly refuse to bet. Turnover plummets. Favourites unfairly lose. Rails awful, especially with Group 1 racing. New South Wales stewards will get to the bottom of it.
Well, they're not going to get to the bottom of it. They're never going to get to the bottom of it, right? They're never going to get to the bottom of it, because you've got this. Corfu was a perfect example. Number one, and all track managers, if they listen to this, because I know they do, right?
Yep.
Number one, you've got to get out of your head. Reality is there's lanes. Whether you like it or not, there are lanes on your track, and trying to stifle that doesn't help. And having the track too wet is absolutely a serious negative. It's because horses don't break down. Trainers complain. No. This is a fact. Trainers complain. Now, I'm not saying a horse isn't going to, feel a run. Well, of course you're going to feel a run if you're in a quality field and there's pressure. How do you expect? If you're in a grand final in AFL football versus an all match, I've got a funny feel on the players, because the intensity is so much more, right, that pressure, you're going to feel a lot sore after the event, because you're putting in a lot more effort naturally, because that's the level of the competition. It's not just about the track. Now, all right, okay, fast two, something like that. Maybe this could impact a lot of horses. Well, you should do what people are allowed to do, right? And like it used to be for years and years and years, get the S letter out, scratch.
That's right, it's up to you. Well, I mean, look, the only reason I laugh when you said that, I keep looking at Moonee Valley, 27th of January. Look up how the raw times were insanely fast. Well, firstly, last spring we spoke about that night at Moonee Valley where apparently the track was playing like a F1. Well, I had a Pride of Jenny go for the rest of the carnival. And then 27th of January, Moonee Valley, again, the times were insanely fast all day. Well, the best two performances were V8 beating Southport Tycoon. Well, they ended up running the Quinella in the Australian Guinea. So I reckon they come through that all right.
Well, here's the other problem, right? Here's the other problem. And racing in general needs to understand this. Maybe a lot of people don't say it enough, right? What do you want? Just all fast and slow horses to be more even? No. What it should be every horse has their idiosyncrasies. Some like wet tracks and they're fast superior, because others don't, right?
They'll get them. The rain will come.
And then there's fast tracks that some horses love and others don't, right? That's the game.
Yep.
This is the game. That's it. And that's how it should be. But not going out there and doing all these unbelievable, kamikaze moves on tracks. And we're coming up now, we're at a stage, and those comments you just made about various people, we're at a stage where, forget about, we want the track. See, the track's supposed to be race 1 G4. Now, they know on a dry day or good clear day, they can't sustain that all day. But that's what the proper terminology of what the track's supposed to be prepared for, right?
Yep.
But we are preparing for S5s and 6s, so we can be at some stage, some miraculous stage, we're going to be G4. How are we going to get there when they start cutting into the ground?
Zero chance.
Damaging. What work will the track managers have to do after then? They're looking at the track, they go, oh my God, they've smashed through this, right? Good luck.
Well, that's the point. We're not bagging the track managers, we're bagging the policy.
Oh, no, it's definitely the policy, because track managers would much rather love having this scenario. But now that what they're trying to work out, is they're going to try to work out, hey, do we have a G4, you know, later in the day? But what's later? Should be G4 race one. That's the policy.
That is the policy, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. But they're not. They got the policy now. It's S5, S6. Actually, it's S6 because this is what we had in Sydney and Melbourne.
All right, let's get to the Coolmore, the Group 1. I know you would have been pretty happy with Zugotcha. The two horses race morning where you said, even if the track's slow, we'll still want to be with Zugotcha and Red Card. Let's get to Zugotcha. James McDonald rode the perfect race. Tropical Squall led them up. Looks like good pace, but not insane pace, and the best horse won.
Well, yes, the best horse won, and make no mistake, my goodness, is this horse going to be, you know, going in one direction upwards, right? You know, good performance, 0.2 above benchmark first section. Little subtle drop between the 8 and the 4, you know, 0.1 below. It's almost the perfect ride, Ralphie. overall last 800, 0.8 above. The beauty is this. Bit of a fartlek play for this horse as well. This is why I can see a lot more improvement to come. That subtle shift between the 4 and the 2 of about just under a length of downward speed in velocity, then with the rebound, is the first clear sign of more to come. And then also that drop-off between the 8 and the 6, Ralphie, where, again, it was just that getting out early, getting that settling of speed going and giving away, it wasn't over the top, but giving away just a bit more than a length in terms of that velocity drop. Overall, this horse is probably... could have probably, look, if you ran perfect energy, I'm not saying this is what normally happens, but maybe two lengths better. So that's the upside coming.
So Fangirl, unfortunately, is gone for the campaign. Looks like Walter's got his next Fangirl on the way.
It's very sad, though, about Fangirl.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that horse was on the path to, you know, like some serious things. And, you know, like I'm saying very sad because I can't make any money from it.
Absolutely. Was Samana, your point, was Samana too deep in the wrong part of the track?
Well.
Or on the edge.
A lot of them, unfortunately, were in the no man's land however you want to call it. And this wasn't one of them. This was a horse that was like on the borderline. But ultimately, the horse had made that next big step up. It was, I would say, borderline the right spot to be, Ralphie. Worked pretty hard, but also just, like a number of horses did when they come around that bend, they weren't able to maintain that velocity because they're just trying to find your spot in the lanes. And it got a rebound late, probably slightly better than Zugotcha, but the reality is they're both improving.
Red Card was a bit of fun there, Vince, and once it got to the best part of the track first, good luck catching her.
Yeah, this was a really, you know, there was a couple of unfortunately not good rides, but this was ridden to perfection. I didn't know this in running, but 1.6 lengths below benchmark. Goodness me, right? The horse was never going to lose right on that pace, right? And the horse didn't have to do a lot. In fact, you know, the rider eased the horse all the way to the 200, Ralphie, and then because he was coasting.
Yeah.
And he just said, I might as well conserve. And and it wasn't a rush to slow the speed down.
It was a lane type lead, wasn't it?
It was. It was like, can I really control this? And rightfully so, the rider did control. And he, whilst a few others did outkick it right over the last 200 metres, the reality was the margin gain that he had, like Liberated and Airman, that just unfortunately, they're just that too far back for this setup, even though you would say, well, hang on, you're only 2.5-3 lengths below, you know, behind the leader. But yeah, that's true. But the horse is probably, the leader's probably conserving 4 or 5 lengths of energy.
So Ray's asked, was Libertad back to his best? So he's a horse who showed a lot of talent as a younger horse, sort of certainly drifted off at the end of his last prep, just 2 plain runs, and then did nothing first up. What was the list? Well, just eased out of the race. So in the tongue tie first time. But this was a nice closing performance. What did he show you?
Well, it was a good performance by the horse, yes, Ralphie. And when you look at the overall score, it's a benchmark. It's just outside of the top 10. I felt got it very cruisy through the first section, 5.4 lengths below benchmark. Nice move in the mid-race. What was it, around 6.2 length mid-race squeeze? Very, very nice. And overall, last 400 plus 2.5. But the drop-off, again, between the 800 to the 200 was probably a little bit more savage than the winner, and then had to do a bit more work. And unfortunately, as it turns out, that's what probably cost the horse in terms of not being able to finish even closer. But yes, the horse is trending in the right direction and upwards. How far upwards? Well, I'm not sure yet, Ralphie.
Steve asks, thanks for all the content, staking plans and how to manage Vince's tip sheet when he obviously gives top four, five, etc. Any basic framework for managing rather than going on your own thoughts with what he's been given us. So, Steve, if you don't get the preview podcast, which is fair enough, but we always post everything completely unedited on the Monday along with this podcast. So I would recommend listening back to some of our mini podcasts that we put out Saturday morning, because that's where, Vince, you really give your final thoughts and how you personally are going to stake. You say you're going to spend your own money. You don't tell people how to spend theirs. So, but that's really goes to the, I suppose, the conservative nature of your plays and your thoughts with saying, well, there's three slots. As long as I can get one of them, I'll keep the place on side, and that'll be me.
Well, the reality is this, Ralphie. Again, I don't like to say it a lot, but how many have we done this since we've come back, you know, on this podcast, you know, through this period? Well, if you listen to all 6 weeks and you'd, you know, carefully understood what I said, because I make it pretty clear, right?
Yep.
There was a couple of things where you're just a little bit undecided, either track condition or horse, but you would be winning. You would be absolutely winning. And I know this, Ralphie, because I don't lose very often, because I'm very good at what I do. And I don't want to say this, you know, just like that, but that's the facts.
Yep. From Mark, hey, fellas, great work again, as always. As Vince had a chance to look at Eagle Farm, the win from Press Link on the 8th card looks bloody good to the eye. So, Mark, what I'll do, we don't do it on this podcast, Queensland, this time of year, but when the numbers come through, because you're a member, I will send you a little bit of a breakdown as a thank you. Okay, well, Vince.
Just on that, Ralphie, I'm sure we're going to be doing the carnival when it comes along, well, right?
That's right. So when it's carnival time, absolutely, yeah. We will. All right. My head rolled off at one horse, Fitz, and I've just want to give us some clarity. This is a horse you said had a potential Caulfield Cup in it after it won the Oaks, and first up, didn't get the best of runs, but it just looked like it came back like this could be a rising star. Tell us about Zardozi, what it did and how impressed you were, or if you were, on what it put together, because I certainly was.
Well, you're entitled to be impressed, Ralphie, and your eyes were not an illusion, right, in terms of what you've seen. First and foremost, when I look at it, where the horse was, 0.5 above benchmark first section, the lead speed, unfortunately for the leader, Les Vampire, and I was on this horse myself, right, just, you know, it was painful. Couldn't really tell in running, but the horse is going 7.8 lengths above benchmark, overreaching, and got that pace that little bit too, when I say a little bit too wrong, it could have easily have been going a couple of lengths slower. Why I know that is when I look at where the other horses, I mean, Raff Attack's run last, going 6.8 above, and now Kuva, or whatever it's called,
yep,
was ran 5.6 above through the first section, and the second horse, 5.5. That's the true pace. The reason why the last horse ran last is because Les Vampire's always had the control of the race, and the reality is the overextension blew it up. But Zardozi, in my view, was not in the best spot going half above, right? It was probably disadvantaged in that spot by at least 1 to 2 lengths. So that adds volumes to its performance. Secondly, it didn't have to have an overreach between the 8 and the 400. It went from 0.5 above to 2.4 above. But we did see this subtle shift downwards in overall velocity from the 800, or just inside the 800, from about the 700 meter mark all the way to the 200. That horse probably was losing velocity about a length every few hundred meters. So not only was it a length or two disadvantage from the right optimum position, but it also was losing velocity at an important part and then rebound with a 0.2 above, which was unfair. Like if that horse had a better distribution of energy in running and was a touch closer, and we're talking, you know, Ralphie, I'm not a rider, right? I'm just riding through numbers. You're a length, you're going 1.5 above, which would have been no impact for this horse. This horse most likely wins the race by more. So 0.9 above overall, got into the top 10 for the day, which I always love, right? Seventh best performance. Then you look at the mid-race squeeze in the day, Ralphie. The mid-race squeeze was 1.9, you know, ranking 59. So you know this horse did not have a killer run. But what I did love is I looked at the overall last 1,200 for the day and got in the top 10. And further franking for me that they've got this horse in great shape and is going to get huge improvement from that run.
Yeah, she's a beauty. Can't wait to see her take on Orchestral, which will be a fair race. All right, we will stop there because that's we've gone heaps.
We're out of time. What we're going to do,
like I said, we always look after our members. So we've got a little bit of a bonus here for our members, not just what we ask you about the All-Star Mile from a 2000 perspective. There's a little bit of gold too in Sydney that we haven't touched on yet. So if you're a member, you're going to get our bonus podcast. You can be a member via my website, racetrackralphie.com.au, or Vince Accardi's work is via dailysectionals.com.au, including his fantastic race speed profiles. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening to Year Round Carnival.